Do you want to attract and retain employees? As the core of the employer brand, the EVP is the key when creating and implementing an effective strategy that helps you attract and retain the very best talent. But how does it work in practice? How can you create, implement, and continuously update your EVP? Find the answers at employerbrandingstrategies.com. Register today with Link 15. We'll see you in America's finest city, San Diego, California, this May 22nd through the 24th.
Hey, Sansvason! It's Jorgen Sundberg here with the Employer Branding Podcast by Link Humans, London's employer branding agency. Employee advocacy is a term used to describe promotion of a brand by its employees. Today, we're going to discuss how to build a workplace where employees want to engage and become advocates. Let's start the show. Charu Malhotra, how are you doing?
Very good. Very good indeed.
Fantastic. So who are you and what do you do?
Right. So I'm somebody that's worked in employer branding and recruitment marketing and communications for nearly 11 years. I work with organizations either on a consultancy basis or permanent basis to help them articulate, do they need an EVP? How do they create one? And push that forward from a change management perspective. And I've been fortunate enough, Jorgen, to work with organizations like Unilever, Primark, Ferrero. So, very much global brands, but live and breathe employer branding.
Great. Okay. And today we wanted to talk about employee advocacy. Why is this important and why now?
Yeah, so I think why is it important? We've always talked about employer branding and the importance and the power that our colleagues and employees will have. It's not about sprinkling hashtags saying I love my job in an environment to mask a culture that's perhaps toxic or even unattractive. That's not what employee advocacy is. It's not forcing people to say this is a great place to work when it's not. But I think employee advocacy is important now where we have a very disengaged, chronically disengaged in some countries, employee workforce. And at the same time, we're all experiencing a shortage of, I don't want to use the word talent, but shortage of trying to fill our jobs with the right people at the right time. So advocacy and encouraging employees to be advocates is timely. And I think we're increasingly at this sort of cusp of, are we trying to personalize our messages? Are we trying to create an environment where we work more closely with engagement colleagues? So I think it's a really exciting time for advocacy. Where does it sit? Who does it? What does it mean? Is it owned by recruitment, marketing, employee experience, communication? So that's why it's important. Those conversations are happening internally and they impact what we do externally.
Great. Okay. So there are many ways to get employees to want to become advocates, but how do we actually build a workplace where it is encouraged and actually drives advocacy?
Yeah, I think the first thing is the output shouldn't be, okay, we want to create a campaign of advocacy. I think we're both in agreement of that. We have to have an environment where people feel supported, people feel happy where they're working, people feel satisfied in the roles that they're doing, with leaders that are respectful, and a culture where it's empathetic. I think that's the first point, whether it's employees or it's you and I. If you're not in an environment where that's the current state, it would be farcical to expect people to want to be advocates. So I think that's the first instance. So the starting point is, what is the culture? What is the environment? What are the positives? What are the work warts and all? And how do we pick out those areas and give people the license, the permission to promote those areas, but also really, we have great responsibility to reflect back to the businesses that we work in to say these are areas that are problematic. They may not be causing a perfect storm now. Yes, they may not immediately fit into recruitment, but these are going to cause you issues because if people don't feel comfortable with XYZ elements of where they're working, they're certainly not going to promote it, however many times you say it's part of your value set or part of your shiny new EVP. So I think the first instance is a diagnosis of the current environment, so that you can identify, you know, what are the areas that you feel proud of, and what are the areas that are, you know, needing a lot of work. And that's why I love what we do. We, you know, our jobs aren't in working in isolation anymore. We have to work. We have to be partners in crime with our communications and our employee experience colleagues and our business leaders. Because, you know, we're now talking about employees and how they feel. That doesn't just sit with recruitment marketing or talent acquisition.
Right. Okay. And how does inclusion play a part of a successful employee advocacy program?
Sure. So I mean, this is an area where I was actually at a conference a few weeks ago, and I was asked, you know, what comes first, D or I, you know, diversity or inclusion? And my response back to Bill Borman was, who was asking me the question, for me, neither. Belonging comes first. So how does it fit in, Jorgen? I think it fits in because we all want to feel that when we go into work, or, you know, as you and I both doing, you know, working from our offices at home, we belong. We can be our true true selves, our authentic selves in the environment we're living in and working in. And I use the word living deliberately. It wasn't slip up. You know, the amount of time that we spend at work is formidable. So in many cases, you know, it's as important the environment we work in and live in are happy environments. So inclusion and belonging are elements of creating a great place to work, a place that I'm happy to work in and proud to work in, but also don't need to put a mask on to work in. So why is it important? If we have an environment where people feel like they belong, they're much more likely to be happy. If they're happy, they're going to be proud. If they're proud, they will, given the right tools, become natural advocates. And this isn't just relatable to brands that are consumer brands or brands that are in the public eye for because they're tangible. This applies to, you know, the small, medium-sized enterprise in Swindon or the startup in Berlin. It's not about the size or the sexy brand. It's about having an environment where leaders make a concerted effort to make everybody feel like they belong, whoever they are, whatever they are.
Great. Okay. And an employee advocacy program would probably have, well, some of the output will be user-generated content. Do you think, perhaps in, you know, looking forward in the next few years, that once you have created your new shiny EVP, as you mentioned, do you think that companies will still be creating content centrally, you know, the day in the life videos and campaigns and so on, or do you think it will go more into employees carrying the torch and creating the stories?
Yeah, I mean, I think the companies that are doing employee branding and internal engagement in senior communications well are already doing almost a mixed bag of the way that they use employee generated content and corporate communications content that's, you know, created at the center, as you said. Do I see that balance and that percentage changing? Yeah, I do. I think it's weighted, you know, the companies that do this well, it's weighted towards employee generated content, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I don't feel that corporate communications or communications created centrally by recruitment marketing functions will go away. But I think the balance will definitely shift. But I think we're also in very interesting and quite challenging times where employees and colleagues and candidates and consumers are feeling quite a lot of dialogue and pressure around data. You know, obviously you can't fail to sort of see what's happened in the news over the last couple of weeks around our information, how it's being used by big social media giants. So I think it's that sort of delicate balance that the more we encourage our employees to share, you know, with guidelines, with a framework, with support, with the right tools, we also need to be very cognizant of what's happening on externally and how people might feel about, okay, well, how are you going to use the content that I'm sharing, and also the why, you know, why are you encouraging this? So yeah, I think, yeah, more of this employee generated content, really powerful, but I don't think we'll get to a point where the need to create information at the center will disappear.
Okay. And so tactically, can you give us some tips around how to drum up interest in employee advocacy for the actual employees? For them, their objectives will be very different. They're probably looking to advance their careers and so on, whether that's in the organization or outside. How do you really speak to them and to their agendas?
Sure. So I think the first point is recognizing that their intent is a different one to perhaps the recruitment marketing teams or the talent acquisition functions or indeed the HR teams. So I think it's respecting that. So whatever the ask is being respectful of people's time, but also making things both easy. You know, what do you want me to do and how has to be answered, but also what am I going to get out of it? So how would I start and how have I started? Is making it really clear, making it simple. You know, identifying two or three things, no more than that. In that sort of first stage, right? You know, what kind of content do we want people to share? You know, what kind of themes are we trying to hit? And don't keep it so bland and generic. So, you know, everybody wants to talk about being innovative. What actually are we asking? You know, and why? You know, why go out and say we want to promote that we're an inclusive culture? Because actually, that can come across as quite an HR-y term. What does that actually mean to our colleagues and so on? So I think, first of all, keeping it really simple. You know, what are the three things that we are proud of? And also making it really clear that this isn't just three themes that the board has decided or the HR team have decided. It's really important, really critical to show your workings out. So, you know, for me, the starting point is the EVP. The messages and the themes that we're talking about from advocacy should be thought about and co-created by those very colleagues that you're asking to be advocates. So I think that's the first thing. Keep it simple. You know, think about two stroke, three things, messages, themes that you want to communicate over 0 to 6 months or 12 months. And then just think about very much around tools and also people aren't natural not everyone's natural about sharing things on social media. So provide guides. You know, what I've seen work really well is I've done, you know, 3 or 4 storyline animation videos, so kind of helping people understand the why but also how. You know, what can they share, what they can't share. Not rules as such, but, you know, if you're going to give people the permission to, they also need to know where the lines are. So kind of creating tools and frameworks, but do it in a way that, you know, I'm not talking about a dry policy. You know, create video content that will help people, you know, within, you know, 60 seconds of watching something, understand, you know, what can I share and what's the intent. And, you know, innately, what, you know, what's worked, one big organization I worked at where we've got they've got an amazing advocacy program built over sort of 4.5-5 years is reflecting people's innate competitiveness. So starting with pilots, mm-hmm. encouraging an element of gamification, really linking it to sort of the business strategy. So, you know, growth models where we've made acquisitions, where we've got a center that maybe has attrition issues, and employee engagement has sort of created an awareness that this center or this kind of function or this part of the business needs some help. So really kind of, you know, really show this as an area that's going to help attraction, help attrition, help engagement, but make it fun. So yeah, keep it simple. Give people the tools, but in a way that's going to be really easy to consume. And then lastly, as I said, make it fun, you know, being really respectful that you and I, this is our, you know, this is something that we live and breathe. It's our sweet spot. But, you know, you're asking an operations manager that, you know, to do something that isn't going to be natural to him or her. Mm. So help them understand the why and the how.
Great. Okay. You mentioned also previously regarding who owns employee advocacy.
Yes.
Because it's interesting because the word employee, that sort of alludes to HR, but then advocacy could be communications, could be marketing. Oh, that was Alexa. So where does it sit? Who owns it ultimately? I get that a number of departments are involved, but who should take the lead on it?
Sure. So I think when the starting point for advocacy and employer branding comes in, a big element of your audit is social listening. So a lot of advocacy can be happening already, but you're not aware of, or your marketing heads might be aware of, but your communications people internally may not be. So I think the starting point is, once you've done that social listening piece of work that's ongoing, but you know, the starting point is, you know, what's being said externally, you know, have a look at, you know, where are the biggest spikes? Is it consumer led? Or is it, you know, genuinely workplace, you know, advocacy? Are people sharing pictures of their environments on Instagram, you know, with hashtags that actually aren't the corporate hashtags, but have become organically used? And that's exactly the right way. But who owns it? I think, you know, it's very much, for me, advocacy sits with communication. So wherever communication sits, when I was at Unilever, it sat under digital communications. I've worked at other environments and it's sat under HR. I've worked in one company, sat under marketing. So I think, I'm not talking about recruitment communications now, but I think advocacy has become much bigger than recruitment. And that's the right thing. I'm pleased about that. Much bigger than recruitment. So I think it should sit with your director of comms or your VP of comms, because we're ultimately talking about people. And you know, we were talking about consumers or candidates or applicants or employees. They're all different elements and different segments of an audience. So it sits under comms.
Great. Okay. And along the journey of setting up employee advocacy programs and running these, what are some of the pitfalls that you've encountered and our listeners should avoid?
Sure. So I think this is an exciting area, and I think it's relatively easy to get momentum and encouragement from you, whether it's your board or your sort of senior leaders at the start and the onset. The companies that do this well, and what I try to really sort of push, is this becoming part of BAU. So I think kind of the sort of setting the seeds up front that this is not a project or a program that after 3 months or 6 months, you know, job done, let's move on to the next program that's in the next project that's on the roadmap. So I think sort of first of all, pitfall is making it clear that this is part of business as usual activity. It's going to support and enable everything you do within communications and talent attraction and attrition, you know, HR sort of initiatives. But it's not an initiative. It's not a discrete project that has an end date and a start date. I think also recognizing that people are intrinsically busy, and employees are much more likely to be encouraged by leaders that talk about this and then show with humility how they're also learning as well. So, you know, you can't have leaders talking about how important this is at town halls or in a blog or a newsletter if they've actually never shared something on LinkedIn, or if they've never done a podcast to support their internal engagement. So I think, you know, really having your leaders live this and demonstrate that they're on this learning journey too. Again, you know, I think there's some really wonderful organizations there where you've got company heads. I'm not talking about HR, I've got, you know, MDs and CEOs that actually have started with humility, blogging and tweeting and made some mistakes. But actually it's really, I think, really powerful to say, you know, I'm learning too. You know, I there's nothing worse than having a CEO blog that's actually a newsletter and it's only done once every year, because it's, as I said, then it looks like a fad. So I think pitfall one, it's not a discrete project. Pitfall two, get your leaders heavily involved and support them, but also sort of, I don't think it's about being everything being perfect. I think it's about showing we're learning on this too. Let's learn on this together, and showing humility. I think people really buy into that, really love that. And I would respect a leader a lot more if, you know, he or she said, you know, I'm learning too. You know, I read this blog, I let me share this with you. Is it of interest? Give me your feedback. And then thirdly, measure. Don't just build an assumption that actually everyone's on Yammer because we implemented Yammer 2 years ago. Actually, are people listening? Are people finding this content and this channel helpful? So, you know, measure, listen, be very good about iteration. Don't actually think, okay, we think everything should be video content, and, you know, ignore other ways of doing content. So constantly iterating what you're doing by actually seeing what's working. because you don't want to be basing everything on a presumption around advocacy. You might think because you feel that every single person in marketing is on Instagram, that's where you should invest all your training and your efforts. But actually, when you start to measure and listen and search, they may, you know, your colleagues may be spending all their time on a different channel and actually want to be talked to on a different channel. So I think don't, you know, stop your presumptions and constantly iterate and test.
Yeah, and as platforms are likely to be changing over time as well, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Good advice. Okay, and if we look at the technology side of things, now, employee advocacy doesn't have to be mean technology, but I guess when you want to scale it, it is very useful. What technologies have you worked with and which ones would you recommend?
Sure. I don't think either of us could argue with how powerful video content is. But I think it's been, for me, I've recognized that although I've been really very fortunate and worked for big brands where often budgets can be larger, getting technology and support and allow people to create video in a way that's easy and shareable and still got that element of is under a framework is really, really helpful. So I really like, it's an internal channel, internal communications tool that I think really lends itself very well to advocacy, which is called Sendit. And it's a really wonderful kind of video tool where you are able to build in kind of the type of framework that you want employees to share video on. They provide it and send it on to a very really easy, really nimble, very quick central area where it's then edited and then shared back. You know, does this reflect what you've done? But what I like about it is it's really cost effective. It's really easy for employees to shoot and film videos using their own phones, but it also safeguards that element of fear factor that a lot of companies have that, you know, if we allow our employees to create their own video content, which absolutely I'm encouraging, do we still have an element of control about what they're posting? So what I like about this particular tool is, let's say you've got a communications aim or a campaign that you really want to be supporting that year or that quarter around sustainability or you know, whatever the theme is, you can actually communicate to all the employees using this sort of platform, this video platform, to say, okay, think about video, creating video that sort of talks to this particular message. So I think it's nice communication, but it's really, really easy to use and very easy for the Sendit team to edit for the corporation that's bought it. And what I love also about the way that they work, it's a relatively small startup in London, is you can use it for pilots, because again, I think a lot of this is around encouraging people that give us the budget to do something and it will work. If you can start off small with a pilot, that's helpful. So this particular firm is quite good about giving you access via pilots. So that's a good piece of tech that I like.
Fantastic. Okay. And if we look at companies out there who you think are doing this right, who would you like to mention?
I know it's a really obvious one, but I mean, I love everything that Adidas and L'Oreal do. Clearly, I know that I said at the start that it's not always about big brands, but for me, I really enjoy looking at how L'Oreal and especially Adidas have evolved over the last of 10 years around their whole advocacy programs. But they also demonstrate that this doesn't happen overnight. It happens by really, you know, linking things to the business strategy. But I love the way they create content. I like that this wonderful mix of both grainy content and obviously big budgeted corporate campaigns that they do. Yeah, I'm a big fan of both organizations.
Fantastic. Okay, so that's it. Where can the listeners find out more about your work and where can they connect with yourself, Charu?
Sure. So I'm on LinkedIn as Charu Malhotra1. I'm on Twitter, CM_Charu. I'm on Insta as CM_Charu. So love talking about this, as you can tell. And I'm often on the conference circuit. So yeah, reach out on any particular channel that you want to and happy to talk.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
All right. I hope that was useful. Everything Charu and I discussed will, of course, be in a show notes article, which you'll be able to find at employerbrandingpodcast.com. www.employerbrand.com. Now, I should probably mention that in addition to speaking to Charo, I co-wrote a book called Employee Advocacy, The Ultimate Guide, which is available on Amazon. Feel free to check that one out. All right, as Cara mentioned at the very start of today's show, the Employer Branding Strategies Conference takes place at the end of May, so the 22nd through the 24th in San Diego. If you're coming, please let me know. I'd love to say hello over a coffee, smoothie, or a beer. You can choose the beverage, in fact. If you haven't got your ticket yet, head on over to employerbrandingstrategies.com to check it out. Punch in the promo code LINK15, so that's LINK15, for a 15% discount. And I'll also put a link to the event in the show notes and really hope to see you there. Stay classy, San Diego. Brum-tsh. Have any questions for me? Feel free to ping me at jorgen@linkhumans.com or find me at Jorgen Sundberg on Twitter. And that is it for today. Many thanks for tuning in and catch you next time. Hey door!
So there's two fish in a tank and one turns the other and says, do you know how to drive this thing? So, you know, cue groans. Yes, it's come from a Christmas cracker. I love it. But I'm, you know, as I said to Jorgen, I'm not a joke teller.